Hey, I'm Zale, host of Preconceived, a podcast that challenges the preconceptions that shape how we view the world. Preconceived examines both our approach to major life choices, but also our perspectives on issues to which we may have been overly conditioned towards certain opinions. Each episode features a different topic, with experts, researchers, and luminaries in their respective fields. We think you will especially enjoy recent episodes on polyamory, regretting parenthood, dopamine nation, and myths of the beauty industry. Find Preconceived wherever you get your podcasts.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, baby.
Hello, my God.
This is it. This is the final episode of season two of Turn Me On Podcast, which is funny to say because season one, I believe, lasted 49, 50 episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And season two lasted 100
the rest.
And, yeah, 150 episodes.
Mm-hmm.
The whole season thing is actually just bullshit. We like, I don't know what happened with the first 50. We did the first like 50 episodes and then we...
And then I went on a 3-month road trip.
Oh, you left. And it was like, we can't do this because we didn't have the faculties to record remotely
yeah,
at the time.
Up until this year, we didn't do any remote recordings.
No, that's right. We didn't.
We were like, no, we can't do that. It's Turns out we can.
Turns out we can. And so, yeah, so then we called it season two, but it just went on and on and on and on. Mm. Kind of like Lost. I hope not like Lost because Lost got worse as it went along.
Mm.
It seems like things have been good as we've been going along. I feel like we've hit a stride.
I think so too. And I think that
we won't this fucking donut. Hey, can you just not be distracting? Go on, buddy.
Come here, boo.
Just go be a dog elsewhere. Just be...
Do dog things in your bed with your toys.
You know, it reminds me when we had Bigby. And Bigby would be a nuisance while we recorded.
Remember we used to get complaints?
Did we?
Yeah, we used to get complaints that... I feel like you addressed... complaints that we never stopped talking about the dogs.
Oh, yeah,
but then
yeah.
We got far more letters of support saying
yes.
That we should continue to
talk to our dog,
include the dogs and now we have there's a new one.
I know we got like cough complaints.
Yeah.
But I don't remember much. Yeah. Anyway, so we're in our last episode of season two. We're so excited to bring you so full disclosure, the recording that we're throwing to today. We recorded this quite a while ago.
Yeah.
And we actually held on to it because it was so fucking good.
Yeah, we loved this conversation. And it's also something that I have been kind of talking about on the podcast for a handful of months, I think, and pursuing on my own. Our conversation today is with... fuck. Can we just pause that while I go ahead and recall her name? Do you know her name?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I do.
Yeah, what is it? It's Lisa Hendrickson, Jack. I just want to double check it before I...
It is Lisa Hendrickson, Jack.
It's... So I wanted to call her Fertility Friday because that's the name of her podcast. But she had Lisa Hendrickson Jack wrote a book called The Fifth Vital Sign. And it's basically a manual for your monthly cycle. And it includes all kinds of fantastic information about the health of people who have uteruses, and it is changed my life. So her book also comes with a workbook, and I'm on month 5 of tracking my cycles with this incredible workbook. If you are like me and you love a good organizational tool, this thing is awesome. It's a really, everyone, you know, I used to use the app, an app on my phone, and that's great and everything. But the way that the apps generally predict for you, you know, you say, oh, today's the first day of my cycle. And then if you look ahead in the app, it'll predict that every 28 days, you'll have, be on the first day of your cycle. And it's just sort of automatically adjusts to that. But in reality, a cycle anywhere between 25 and 35 days, I believe are the numbers, is pretty normal. And also you can fluctuate quite a bit in between. So if you really want to gather information about your cycle, then tracking it in this way includes, well, we'll talk about it in the episode, but taking your temperature every morning at your resting temperature, you're noting your cervical mucus, so the production of mucus that your body makes several days out of your cycle, which is an indicator of fertility, aka when you could get pregnant, whether you want to or not want to. There's really only a select few days. And actually, Jeremy, I didn't tell you this, but how can I say this without giving away too much private information? We have some young women in our family.
Yeah.
And one of them recently was talking to me about a sexual debut, and I whipped out this book and I was like, did you know that, you know, this is our like 99% effective a form of birth control, just like paying attention. And her immediate response was, why didn't she said, you mean I can only get pregnant at certain times of the month? And I said, yeah. She said, I didn't know that. Mm. I said, I know. I'm 37 years old. I only learned this like a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
So this is super important information. Yeah.
I mean, it was an episode that even blew my mind like wide open. And we are very excited. Oh my God. I brought the worst toy for him today. Okay. It's an episode that really blew my mind, and I'm excited for folks to hear it. But before we get into it, we got other shit to talk about.
Yeah, we do.
Do you want to talk about this, the sex points thing?
I kind of do.
All right, let's do it.
Because we talked about it with, this was a previous guest, Batsheva. Dr. Batsheva wrote this book called Batsheva. Sex Points. Sheva, it's shelf. I associate it with the word shelf in my mind so I could remember the vowel. Shev, shelf, Sheva.
Just let him go to town. He'll fucking give it up in a second.
All right.
Jesus Christ! I should have fucking left him at home.
So
you know why else we're taking a little 1 month hiatus? It's so that I can just
raise a puppy.
I can have some maternity leave.
You know, it's funny. Rose, my dog, was throwing up all day yesterday.
Jesus Christ. Should we reset?
She was throwing up all day yesterday and in the night last night. And I was like, oh, I have to get up and clean up a huge amount of puke, like in the middle of the night, you know, and like she puked on the bed and she puked on her bed. So it's like, now I gotta tear off all the blankets. And I had this feeling like, I'm so glad I don't have kids.
Yeah. Well, or a puppy.
Well, I mean, I could deal with a puppy. I can deal with the dog puke, but can you imagine like changing 7 diapers a day? Yeah. And, I mean, you got to pick up dog poop, but I don't know. I guess they're not really comparable. But as I was up at 2 in the morning cleaning up puke and washing a dog bed, I was like, uh-huh.
Oh, my God. Will you pick him up and just pick him up and hand him over to me? Hey, come here, you little baked good. Come here. Oh, my God. You're so fucking cute. If you want to see how cute this little shithead is, join our Patreon.
Yeah.
We've had a bunch of people join over the last little bit. And we do really appreciate your support. And you can watch our foreplay segments or our host episodes from there. And in this next month, when we take a little bit of a break, you're going to get a bonus episode there. So yeah. That's fun.
Just for patrons.
Yep. Here, I'll take them.
Well, now I have them.
All right, just hold on to them then.
Now I have them.
But yeah, so Batsheva... If folks didn't listen to her episode, she sent us 2 copies of her book. She also sent each of us a vibrator, which I
use at least twice a day.
I used it last night.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. It's a good one.
We don't have to get into that.
No, but it's a little toy. It's a little toy. It's just like a little wand.
Yeah.
And
I didn't use it on me.
Right. Okay. Sure.
I had sex last night.
Okay. Great.
I used it on another human.
I will tell you one thing. It took me for fucking ever to figure out how to charge that thing.
Yeah, because so the vibrator that she sent us. It's a waterproof wand, and it has a waterproof charging port that literally is invisible.
It's invisible.
You have to like impregnate the fucking. You have to penetrate the butt end of the wand.
Yeah, and I couldn't figure it out, so I was twisting.
Same. I did the same thing.
You know, and what happened was the rubber around that provides the surface of the vibrator twisted around the core, so my buttons don't line up with.
Oh God! You really were given it, eh?
Well, I was trying to fucking charge it. I was trying to find the charging port because it wasn't charged when I got it, and I really wanted to use it.
Yeah.
But anyway. Oh man.
So I got to ask, because Butt was saying that the wand was like, you know, is the toy that most people tend to gravitate towards.
Or get results from.
Is this your first wand?
You had
an Itachi, didn't you?
No, I never had an Itachi.
Okay.
No. Yeah, I think it is my first wand.
Okay. And what are your thoughts?
I love it.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting because I didn't like, so I've had a couple of vibrators in my day and they've all been pretty phallic looking.
Yeah.
And I've can use them. I would insert them, but that wasn't really my jam. Like I liked the vibrate. So I just kind of thought like any vibrating thing is going to work just as well as a wand. But for some reason, it's really different. I don't know why. I'm obviously not inserting it.
Yeah, you're just using it on the clit.
Yeah, but also like my belly.
Use it on your belly.
Yeah, I like it's a really nice like
massager.
Abdominal massager. And sometimes it's too much just to like hammer it right onto my sensitive places. So I'll just move around the area.
Okay, now I have a question. Do you like the changing up the patterns
on it? On this one, I have not. Okay. I have not changed the pattern.
You just have it go like just the same kind of pattern.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I'm not opposed to the patterns, but right now the one speed thing is working for me.
Yeah.
And, cool. And also embarrassingly, I have been, so sometimes I'm just like, I just need to get there. I need to get there a little more quickly.
Yeah.
I don't want it.
Wait, you're in a rush?
Well, I'm like,
I don't got time for this. I'm
not in the mood to do it, but I
are you just doing it for maintenance?
I'm doing it for maintenance a little bit. Yeah.
Cool.
And so I've been watching, not paying for, but watching just the trailers of a bunch of Erica Lust videos just to kind of stimulate my mind.
Hmm.
Yeah, because this book that that Bacheva sent us, I'm really into it.
Yeah.
It's really revealing some things to me. So basically, the beginning of this book starts with a quiz, 32 questions.
Which you can do online. You don't need the book.
Exactly.
And I believe it's thesexbook.com/quiz. Just, it says right here.
Sexpointsbook.com.
Sexpointsbook.com/quiz.
Yeah. And the whole thing is, the whole concept is, you know, based on a point system. So like if you have a threshold of like 100 points, you're probably doing all right with your sex life. But
right.
There's all these different things that can subtract or add points.
Okay.
And when you do the quiz, it sort of gives you a score in four different categories.
Right. And we should also say, I went to do the quiz, but then I stopped. It didn't really make a lot of sense because it is pretty much made for vulva owners.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So for an example, like some of the questions are, like question number one is, during the last few months, how often have I had sexual thoughts, feelings, or fantasies, either spontaneously or prompted by someone else or something I read or watched?
Right.
And then you've got A, I don't think I've had any. B, maybe once or twice a month. C, about once or twice a week. Three or four times a week. E, one or more times a day.
Right.
And I don't know how many of the listeners can relate to this, but when I was, you know, at the beginning of the internet, but also like even before that with like girly magazines, quizzes were, you could buy books just of quizzes to tell you about your personality.
Right.
I don't know. That was definitely a thing among the girls my age anyway. So you go through these and you answer and it gives you an overall total score. So when I did it, my score, isn't going to tell me, my overall score came to 100 exactly.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh,
but
whoa.
You can have more points than that.
I'm very surprised by that.
I know.
I would have thought based on the things that we've discussed over the last, you know, year.
Mm-hmm.
I would have thought you would have sat around like maybe like 50 or 60.
Yeah.
Is that where you were anticipating?
I was anticipating something, but then you divide your points. Basically, you tally up your points again to see how you do in the four different categories that she addresses as like the problems. The four quadrants are pain, arousal. Hang on one second. Pain, arousal, orgasm, and desire. And I think she says, you know, like the kind of the best you can do, I think, in any of these quadrants is like a 35 point situation or 45 point situation, I think, is actually the threshold.
In each quadrant. Right.
So my arousal score is 32. So I'm not having a problem with arousal based on these questions. So arousal is like you get lubricated, you stay lubricated, like all of that kind of stuff. My pain was 28. So basically like occasionally it's uncomfortable, but it's no big deal for me.
Right.
My orgasm score was 32. Like pretty much like my orgasms are still the same as they always were.
Right.
I can get there. Like pretty, even though they're not always like mind-blowing orgasms, I usually orgasm. But my desire score is 13.
Ah, okay.
And,
all right, so even though you scored 100, there's still a quadrant where you go, okay, this could use a little work.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. So desire is that gap essentially between like wanting to have sex and not really wanting to have sex. Like it's actually like the way she puts it in the book. It's actually just easier to maybe do the laundry. Like I get just like a little more satisfaction if I just did that right now.
Right.
And that can be, you know, desire can have to do with other things on your mind. It's just like not your attention. Or basically what the impression that I'm getting is like flexing your erotic muscles by fantasizing, by sexualizing your partner or sexualizing other people or just like in general, practicing desire.
Right.
And one of the things that really stuck with me, because this is a long and oft argued upon point in a lot of relationships.
Oft. O-F-T, oft?
Oft.
Is that short for often?
Yeah.
Is that like what the cool kids are saying, or is that a...
I think it's an old thing.
Oft. Yeah. Okay.
But I really wanted to just read this particular part because... Okay. So I read this. I was like, oh my God, this is me. She's telling me about me. Like, desire wanes after about a year or two of a new relationship. And it's not that the partner isn't attractive or less attractive. There's just like, it's just like a I don't know what happens.
But sure. Anyway,
so I'm learning. So here we go. I opened this book up a couple of days ago, just being like, okay, I've got to read more. And I opened it to this page and I was like, fuck, this is exactly what I needed to hear. Mm-hmm. And I think hopefully this will resonate with some other folks who may be sort of in the same boat as me. It's page 202 and the heading is First, Schedule Sex, period. You need to put sex on the schedule. I don't know how to say that in a less pedantic way, but if you don't make time for sex, it just ain't gonna happen. Almost every couple I know who maintains an ongoing sex life with their partner has sex on a schedule, whether they're aware of it or not. Hmm. When asked, they will say, oh, I don't know, I guess we pretty much always have sex on the weekend. Or, I don't really know, but I guess more than 3 or 4 days don't usually go by without us having sex. That's what I mean by a schedule. Hmm. But if you're getting started, you might want or need to be more concrete with your partner. Okay, John, it's time to get our sex life back on track. Let's talk about a time that works for both of us. I'm tired at night. How about Wednesdays when you work from home, or Thursdays when you go in late, or Saturday afternoon when the kid naps? I know, this doesn't sound sexy, but you need to let go of that fantasy, just for a while. Trust me, it's way sexier to have sex once a week, sometimes by rote and sometimes really hot, than to never have any sex at all. Mm. And the starting bid for that is to set it up as a schedule. And then... you need to figure out what artificial things might bolster you to have a regular ongoing sex life. I'm going to give you a list of strategies, but they are all predicated on the idea that it's okay. Actually, it's good to come up with artificial ways that make you want to have sex with this person you have chosen to be with right now. You shouldn't feel less than, you shouldn't feel guilty, you should feel reasonable and grown up and, dare I say it, downright self-righteous that you are coming up with all kinds of ways to keep your sex life alive and breathing. Because if your sex life is alive and breathing, then sometimes it will be dancing from the rooftops. So let's find some ways to make this work.
So this idea of artificial ways, does she go into that?
Yeah. So the strategies, and I'll just read the headings for the strategies, are fantasies, what's happening in your head.
Okay.
The benefits of an affair without the affair, and bring your partner to work day, role playing light. I love this. Some people think that role playing means full on dressing up, meeting in a hotel and putting on a Southern accent. And well, yes, it can mean that. And if you don't have to worry about leaving your kids with a babysitter or that your teenager will walk in on you, then go for it. But the reality is that there are children in the next room and deadlines tomorrow at work, and you may not be up for a mock chance meeting at a bar in Paris. So scale down the expectations for role playing. Maybe use a long red wig or a leather jacket or baby doll pajamas. Or maybe props aren't your thing. Maybe it's a storyline that you want to share. We're both at a keg party and you see me across the room, or I'm Han Solo and you're Princess Leia. Or you're fast asleep and I climb in the window to wake you up. Just having a starting storyline can get you and your partner thinking about sex in different ways. Role playing can be as simple as remembering yourself at different times. This doesn't necessarily mean getting dressed up and going to a costume party or kissing on the subway, but what about going to a party and secretly pretending you've just met? What about going to a bar and having your partner try to pick you up again, like it's the first time? blah, blah, blah. Anyway.
I like that. That's fun. That sounds really fun. The, the like meeting for the first time at a bar or a party.
Yeah.
I've never, role playing's never really, I've never really
gotten
done,
it.
Yeah. I've never really gotten it. Never really done the role play thing, but that's, I think that would be very fun. That would be a fun, like, there's something for, there's a fun like skit in there that I think it, like a real life skit that you could play it. Something you said though that I'm that I would like you to elaborate on.
The benefits of an affair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That seems, what is that? That sounds like a slippery slope. And and it made me feel a little icky.
Icky? Okay.
Yeah.
So maybe I should read, let's see, does it make sense if I give this a little bit? But essentially, what she goes into, she gives a couple of real life examples of women who have ended up in her therapy room because their husbands had an affair and they're devastated, but also
their sex life has like skyrocketed.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. So I get that.
Yeah.
I've been there.
Mm-hmm.
I've been there not through an affair, but like more so through the polyamory thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like when Becca and I were together and we would say we slept with someone together or I slept with someone, you know, while I was away on work, every single time coming back to our relationship, things were like way spicier.
Mm-hmm.
So I get that.
Mm-hmm.
But what is the exploration of an affair to get the benefits of an affair without actually like, you know what I mean? Like, is she saying like,
what she's saying is, what she's saying is what happens in an affair when people's libido goes up is that they realize that there's a part of their partner they don't know that's mysterious.
Mm-hmm.
There's a part of their partner. Well, their
partner
is... Like
the affair partner.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Their partner that they've been with for however long is sexy and appealing to someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can create those situations where, so basically, you know, for example, okay, so let's see what she, let's just see what she says.
Sure,
so,
sure.
So, so basically she's talking to one woman who, you know, she's like, my husband is really kind and sweet and thoughtful and generous and I love him to pieces. But when I fantasize, I'm fantasizing about like my high school boyfriend who got thrown into jail for selling drugs and rode a motorcycle.
Right.
Right.
Okay.
So then, the doctor suggests that you try that this woman think about it. Does your husband ever get angry? And all of a sudden there's this memory of, oh yeah, there's this one time when he was super pissed about whatever, whatever, whatever. And I actually found it to be a really big turn on. So if we start to like, I think her point is like, start to look at your partner in that way of
look at your partner the way that you look at the people that you fantasize about having an affair with.
Essentially, like find those qualities that it's like your attitude kind of has to change about your partner.
So it's less about go out and like try to stimulate an affair all the way up to the point of not actually having the affair.
Yeah. It's like have an affair with your partner
in your mind.
Yeah.
Oh, have an affair with, I get you now.
You know, like put them in that light of someone other, not just a part of you or someone you know super well, but those things that,
that kind of falls. That also sort of falls into like the role playing thing, sort of.
Totally.
You know, it's like one sided role play.
Yeah. And
okay, that makes more sense.
And it leads into the
next. And is a little less icky.
Yeah. That leads into the next subject, which is bring your partner to work day.
What is that?
Well, it's what if you go to work, it's like remember how Esther Perel talks about this too. It's like when the person is in their element or they're doing something where they're very in control or in charge or they're, you know, they're earning respect from people around. If you can see them in that environment where you don't usually see that, then that can be incredibly sexy. If you go to their workplace and you watch them do what they're competent in, you know, I can think about going to like Todd's job site and be like, oh yeah, I like this.
Watching work. Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. I get that. Yeah. Yeah. I went to a show went to a show a couple of nights ago, like one of the first live shows I've been to in a while.
Wow. Okay.
It was this 80s cover band. What were they called? Maximum Overdrive. Oh, man, I got to say, so this is my Just the Tips, all right? My Just the Tips is if you are ever in a city where Maximum Overdrive is playing, go to this fucking show. Holy shit. What a fucking fun time.
When you say 80s cover, like what kind of 80s?
You name the fucking 80s hit and they're playing it. Like I wear my sunglasses at night.
I love that song.
Sweet Dreams Are Made of These, like all that shit.
Yeah.
And the there's two like lead vocalists, a guy and this woman. And there was, what song were they playing? I think it was like Sweet Dreams Are Made of These. Whatever that song is called. I just know that that's the like main.
Yeah, I don't know.
Sweet Dreams, maybe? Anyway.
Sweet Dreams.
But watching her perform, I was like, oh, right. This is what it feels like to watch someone really kill it, like in their element, just slaying on stage. And it was like immediate like crush zone, you know, where I was just like, oh wow, I'm falling in love right here just watching this person like play, you know.
Yeah.
Adam Baldwin also got up and did Take Me On.
Oh, I love that.
And Adam's got like a really low register.
Okay.
And so he can't, wow, he can't do the like
falsetto.
Yeah. And so he drops it down, and it was again, it was just like, holy fuck, you are such a like babe up there, like just taking control of this song that you have no right singing in terms of your vocal performance, but you've nailed it. Ugh, I loved it. I love that shit.
Remember, like Esther Perel puts it in terms of when do you turn yourself on?
Mm.
And that really resonated with me.
Mm.
The feeling of, well, when I'm on stage,
yeah,
when I'm facilitating something that like I feel very confident at,
mm-hmm,
even sometimes teaching yoga, not turning myself on like I'm so hot right now, but I'm standing in a place where I feel really powerful.
Yeah, totally. Cool. Okay, I like this. This is great.
I also really wanted to read this part as well, the fantasies part, what's happening in your head.
Yeah.
Because I think it gives a certain amount of permission that we may all really need to hear. She says, the easiest approach is to use fantasies in your head while you're having sex or before you're having sex. Yes, you are going to have sex with the same person you have had sex with 500 times before. But in your head, you can be having sex with three new people who look extraordinarily exciting. Or you can be ravished by the captain of the city's baseball team. Or you can be picked up by the sexy gal on your favorite Netflix show. You don't think you actually need to be thinking about your partner the whole time, every time, do you?
Mm.
Think again. There's no way any human can keep an ongoing sex life alive in a monogamous relationship without escaping into a fantasy world. Okay, maybe I shouldn't say there is no way, but I will say that it is downright unlikely. But that somehow feels wrong, I hear you muttering. Isn't that kind of like cheating? And I don't want my partner thinking about anyone but me when we're having sex. At the risk of sounding redundant, I will say it again. It's time to give up on the romantic, magical, idealized, and completely unrealistic view you have about sex.
Right.
Actually, it's quite right, I'll respond. And that might be a great place to start. If you think of yourself as someone who doesn't fantasize, think again. You can learn to fantasize. It's all about learning to use your brain in a new way. It may feel awkward or uncomfortable initially, but it's absolutely critically important for you to learn to fantasize. You would be amazed at the number of points your brain can provide. And then,
I want to say the one thing that makes my like heart kind of cringe a little bit about that.
Yeah.
Is like the thought of being with a partner that I'm in love with, that I'm like super attracted to, love having sex with.
Yeah.
But then thinking, it's one thing if they're like, I'm thinking about the captain of the baseball team of my town ravaging me.
Yeah.
But it's a completely different thing if they're like, I'm thinking about my last
ex-boyfriend,
yeah, my ex,
yeah,
who like did this thing really well that you don't do. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to like, that makes me feel sick.
Okay. But also, you don't have to tell your partner what you're thinking about.
Right.
Dr. Ruth said that.
Yeah. You know,
that's
totally
why they exist for you.
Yeah.
And honestly, I don't think it's like I'm just going to close my eyes and pretend I'm having sex with someone else. Although I do think that there are moments where that can be really erotic.
Yeah.
Like I've said before, and I never had the words for, sometimes if I'm feeling jealous or insecure about a particular other
person,
woman,
being
into my partner or them being into her, I will just imagine without telling my partner that I am pretending to be her.
Hmm. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
I hear what you're saying.
Is that totally fucked up? I don't think so.
I don't think it's totally fucked up. It's not my bag.
No. Of course not.
Different strokes.
But chapter 16 is titled Neuroplasticity, which you know I am all about.
Yeah.
Change your brain, change your sex life.
Yeah.
And really, she I won't go into this chapter, but she goes into, you know, very accessible but scientifically supported detail about how you can rewire your brain to learn how to fantasize, to learn how to get aroused more quickly, to learn how to exercise that muscle of desire on a regular basis so that it doesn't always feel like a massive mountain that you have to get over. And that's just what I got from the book. But if anybody else gets something from any of the other quadrants that are like, okay, maybe this is me, I think there's a lot of really help. And she's so frank and just like humorous about it that I think it's I'm really happy.
Very cool. Happy
that we got these books.
Very cool. Yeah. Well, again, that's that episode, if you didn't listen to it, it was Batsheva. Great guest. The book is, like you're saying, Bridie, the book's great.
Yeah.
It's called Sex Points. And I guess is that your Just the Tips you recommend in this book?
Well, it's not my Just the Tips. I have a different
one. Oh, do you have one?
I do.
All right.
Have you seen The White Lotus?
No, but it's an Apple TV show, right?
Uh-huh.
I haven't.
It's really good. I highly recommend it.
What is it again?
It's fascinating. So the opening scene is in an airport and there are an older couple, set of travelers, and they're sitting across from a lone traveler, you know, on those benches at the airport, you're facing each other. And they start asking him all kinds of questions about his vacation and where he stayed. And he tells them he stayed at the White Lotus. And they're like, oh no, we heard someone died at that place. And
it's like a comedy about this, like,
it's a dark comedy.
Dark comedy about this, like, crazy Hawaiian resort, right?
Yeah,
yes,
exactly.
I watched the trailer.
It's really good.
Yeah.
I'm a huge fan. There's only about three episodes out right now, but it is, I can tell. And it's a limited series. There's only going to be six episodes. It's a mini series.
Yeah.
And then it's so funny in the opening scene, we heard someone died. Yeah. And he says, yeah, the body's on our plane. And they're like, oh wow, well, what were you, how was your vacation? He was like, I was on my honeymoon, actually. And they were like, oh great, where's your wife?
Oh, no.
And
oh, no.
He just looks at him and goes,
oh god,
he goes, I just,
she's on the plane.
Yeah, basically he's like, just fucking leave me alone. And then he looks out the window and there's this coffin being loaded in, and you're like,
oh wow.
And then it's a roller coaster of characters and personalities, such great actors, like a really great cast.
Someone made it. It was from the same makers of a different show that has this, but I forget what it was. Because when I saw the trailer, I was like, oh, I loved that previous show. But then I watched the trailer and I was like, this doesn't really look like it's for me. But
maybe I'll
check it out.
I think you'll get a kick out of it. There's some really great moments,
okay,
like really great comedic moments in it. I wonder what the other show is.
Yeah, I don't remember.
It's very stylized.
Who wrote it / directed it?
The program creator is Mike White. It's an HBO show.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. American satire comedy drama. Mike White. It doesn't say.
What did Mike White do?
Mike White. What did you do, Mike White? Charles and Chuck and Buck, School of Rock, Nacho Libre.
Nacho Libre and School of Rock. Those movies are, I would rewatch those.
He's also known for his appearances on reality television, competing on 2 seasons of The Amazing Race, and later becoming a contestant and runner-up on Survivor.
The schmazing schmaze. cool. All right, The White Lotus.
Yeah.
Well, let's throw to this conversation because it is really like just a mind-boggling. If you're listening to this. And you're not fully aware of like the fertility method. Holy fucking schmoly.
And it's called fertility method, but do not think that it is only for preventing pregnancy or only for getting pregnant. It really is.
It is required life. Education.
It should be taught 100% to all pubescent humans.
Yes. Yeah. Even males. Even people with penises.
100%.
Yeah.
If you really want to know, you know, if you really want to know what goes into us having to prevent pregnancy or get pregnant and all of the shitty things that prevent us from having a say or having any kind of control, like, don't even get me started. You've heard about what's going on in Texas.
Yeah, the abortion shit.
Yeah, for listeners who are maybe outside the states or haven't realized, there is a bill, I think it's called Senate Bill 8, that is due to come into play on September 1st in the state of Texas. But anyone in or out of the state of Texas can sue anyone in the state of Texas, whether they know them or not, for $10,000 of damages if you have aided and abetted an abortion. Not if you had one, but if you are the taxi cab driver who drove someone to the abortion clinic, if you're the doctor or nurse, if you're the clergy member who counseled someone about their pregnancy, anybody.
It's just, it's like straight up Handmaid's Tale.
And they have
shit.
No idea what that's going to look like when it comes into play in September. It could be hundreds or thousands of lawsuits.
What a bunch of losers.
Yeah, it's really lame. But also, do also know that there's a civil, I think it's called a civil lawsuit, when the doctors and healthcare providers are now suing the state to try to keep it from coming into play. Oh, it's so like
so dumb,
unruly, and so dumb, crazy.
Yeah. Anyway. Well, we hope you enjoy this conversation with Lisa Hendrickson Jack. And folks, so happy that you were with us for season 2. We're not gone for long. It's literally just a month. So we're just, we're taking like summer vacation. We will be back in the first hump day of September.
Yeah, you bet.
And we can't wait to be back with you all. And again, to everyone that has hopped on board to support the podcast, especially as we go into this new chapter of life with Bridie going back to school, by joining us on Patreon. If that is you, thank you so much. I know we have some people to thank here, but if you've been kind of on the fence, now's a better time than ever. We could really use your support. And it's one of those things that just allows us to keep this podcast going. I know that we're like through Acast, you're hearing a lot of ads on the show. And yes, we do make some money from those ads, but it is, it really is peanuts. Where we support ourselves from this podcast truly comes from you, the listener. And so whether that is you who is financially supporting via Patreon, or that is you who is continuously listening, and recommending the podcast, all of that goes into just continuing to help us keep this project afloat. In the realm of podcasting, we're really just a little baby. Mm-hmm. We're just a little baby podcast when it comes to like download numbers and stuff like that. And it does feel like a very small, tight-knit, perverted family. So thank you all so much for listening. for all your support, whether that's via Patreon or leaving ratings and review on Apple Podcasts or just hitting the follow button on Spotify.
Or sending us messages. We do, like, those go a really long way.
They do.
Too.
Yeah. So thank you all so much for that. Here is a couple of big, big, big shout outs to some patrons and people who wanted to support us with their wallets.
We set a goal to double our patron numbers with this campaign, and we set our goal for today, for July 28th, our 200th episode and final episode of season two for Turn Me On. And we got about halfway to our goal.
Yep.
So we're gonna keep appealing to you. I know some of you are not caught up to date on episodes. So if you're so inclined, even 2 weeks from now or 4 weeks from now to join the Patreon, wow, we are so grateful. And this week we specifically want to thank Rhea, Megan, Tiffany, Lola, Colin, Raylene, and Ginny. You folks are awesome. Thank you. Just really thank you. Thank you so much.
And Kathleen.
Yes. Who is a mama bear of the podcast.
Yeah.
And also Maddie. Some of you have chosen to just up your Patreon levels.
Big shout out to Maddie also. Maddie and I have talked on Instagram a number of times now. She's kind of a low-key producer for the show. Have I told you this?
No.
Maddie has reached out to me like pretty much, not weekly, but like a number of times to be like, hey, there's a, like, you fucked up in the editing here or here or here. Like, there's theme music playing through the, and I'm like, oh, fuck me. So Maddie, thanks for sending me all your editing notes. The podcast wouldn't be nearly as high quality if it wasn't for you.
That's true. And I don't think she even listens to the podcast, but I want to thank Lauren, as well as Brian, who
Sick Boy Lauren?
No, Lauren, I think her last name is Rosenthal, and Brian Gross, who have of them probably accounted for like at least 25% of the guests of season two. They represent some amazing folks out in the industry, mm-hmm. out in the world. Yeah. And I guess luckily we've conducted some good conversations with their so they're happy to send us more. And some of our favorite episodes have come through those channels. So also some low-key producers.
All right, folks, this is our conversation all about the fifth vital sign, which is available now. You can get it wherever you find books. And really hope you enjoy this. This is, again, we saved this one just for you, because we wanted to go out on our 200th episode with a bang, and this is a fucking bang. Hope you enjoy it. Patrons, we love you. We will see you. And everyone listening, we will see you on the other side. We are rolling, and I am so excited because I just heard, now that Lisa's here, it's International Vagina Day. Although not technically, maybe, but I think we're going to be learning a lot about, I know I'm going to be learning a lot about the internal workings of the vagina and the reproductive system of folks with vaginas. But Bridie, you brought this together, and I'm really glad that you did. Why don't you take us away here and give our listeners a little bit of insight into what we're stepping into?
Okay. So I am really determined to not make this episode all about me. But I have been so looking forward to talking to you about this, because Lisa, I got turned on to your work. I can't quite remember how now, but at least a year or so ago. And set off on this journey to start tracking my cycles. And, you know, I really went for it. I realized I had an app and I was like, hadn't read your book, but I was, you know, I was tracking my cycles and I was trying to pick up all this information. And then I come home from a long road trip and a friend of mine who was a little ahead of me in this journey gave me your book, which is called The Fifth Vital Sign, Master Your Cycles and Optimize Your Fertility. And she gave me your workbook because she was suffering with a really painful periods. And eventually, you know, she started tracking her cycle to sort of deal with that. But then eventually she decided to have a full hysterectomy to get, you know, to get rid of a lot of, I think it was endometriosis that was troubling her. And, so she gave me your work, her copy of the workbook, which she had only filled in a couple of pages for. So now I have it and I've been tracking for 4 months and I have so many questions, but first I want our listeners to know who you are, what you're all about, and especially what is the fertility awareness method.
Well, first of all, thank you for that. So I am a fertility awareness educator, holistic reproductive health practitioner, and I was very fortunate to stumble across fertility awareness cycle charting when I was really young. So I was about 18 or 19 years old, just out of high school in my like post-high school feminist phase. And I had been taught, like most women, that you can get pregnant every single day of the cycle. So I, like most women, was just completely terrified of getting pregnant. Kind of like that, if he looks at me, I'll get pregnant kind of thing. And this is where we're at, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And so I went to a couple of these really cool kind of feministy presentations at my university and discovered that I'm not fertile every single day. I discovered that there's a short fertile window from a scientific perspective. It's 6 days of the cycle. It's actually men that are fertile all the time. And so for me, my personal experience was that I was not sexually active in high school. I did get put on the pill because I wanted to be, because I had really heavy, painful periods. And so, you know, being like 15, it was like, wow, this is like magic, because my pill periods were a lot less heavy and painful. So I was like, I'm fixed. So I went off the pill, but my periods, when I got my actual periods off the pill, were still exactly the same. So I didn't have the language or knowledge to really understand or describe it, but I did know that the pill periods weren't really periods and that it wasn't actually fixing me. And so when I became sexually active, I did the opposite thing. I came off the pill because I knew I wanted kids someday, like far into the future, but not, but I didn't. So I didn't want to get pregnant, but I also had the sense of like, I think there's something wrong. I don't really understand it. I don't think I should be doubled over in pain like I'm having labor when I'm just having my period, which is what happened. And so I went off the pill and I just kind of, I was like, I don't really know anything right now, but I'm just going to like try to figure it out over time. And so looking back, it's really great that I had that level of even just curiosity and understanding that this isn't like, even though I didn't really have a reason to know this, I did feel like it shouldn't be this way. But that's essentially how my journey started. So now it's like 20 years later, I started the podcast and I wrote the book, because when I shared this information with women, as you can imagine, the most common thing I hear is like, why doesn't everybody know this? Like, yesterday, any day of my kind of behind the scenes back end work, I'm speaking to women in their 30s and their 40s, and they're like, how am I 35 and I've never heard this before? How am I 40? How have I had two kids and I don't know this? So that's the summary.
Turn Me On Podcast. We'll be back after this short break.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
That's the part. So I, Bridie, you know, Bridie kind of filled me in on the book and what you do. And I went to your website and I remember reading like the first I don't remember. It was like the first paragraph of like what's on your website, and I went, "What is this the world we live in? How have I never known this? Like why have I always had this understanding that it's like so easy to get pregnant?" And but then it made me think about like you know, I'm 33 now. And I'm at that age where a lot of my peers are trying to get pregnant, trying to have a baby. And it's like all of them are like, this shit's fucking hard. Like, this is hard. This is really tough. Like, it's not that easy to get pregnant. But I remember when I was in high school, like, dear Lord, that was my dad put the fear of God into me when it came to impregnating someone. So like there was that, but also I had no idea. And I also as a male, like I, and everything that I've, and as a male, I don't know anything about anything, but I feel like I've always had this notion that like, that if someone's not on the pill, then the chances of getting pregnant are like super high. And that was what I read on your website. It was like the fertility awareness method is, what was the stat? It's like
99.4% effective when used correctly.
That's astounding.
Okay. Well, let's talk about why, first of all, like, you know, yes. Okay. So this is an awareness of our bodies. We can all have it, but there mm-hmm. are, you know, there are reasons why it's not presented as a viable form of birth control. And that's because doing it correctly is really important if you want to have this 99.4% outcome
right.
that you can predict. And so maybe we can talk about, what is the work? What's the work we have to do to be able to use this method effectively?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many, that's an important question. And there's so many points that I feel like hitting on. I feel like one thing I want to say too is, you know, it is, quote, easy to get pregnant when you're in your 20s, but not every single day.
Right.
It's during the fertile window. So this is, you know, and then there's other things at play as well, where in this conversation of fertility and how, quote, easy it is to get pregnant, I speak to women sometimes who are in their late 30s who are just as afraid of accidentally getting pregnant as they were when they were 19. And so what's missing from that conversation is how both male and female fertility change with age. Because it doesn't mean you, so what I always say to my clients is pregnancy is possible in any cycle with ovulation. So your average healthy couple has about a, you know, 25% chance of conceiving in any given cycle. But that changes with age. So, you know, the kind of like overarching message is maybe we shouldn't be managing our fertility at 35 the same exact way that we do when we're 20. But to answer your, because there's so much there, right? There's so many layers. But to answer your question, so the 99.4% statistic comes from this 2007 Frank Herman study, him and his colleagues. And so they're looking at the symptothermal method of fertility awareness cycle charting. And so to break it down in the easiest fashion, the menstrual cycle, when you're not on contraceptives, it starts with the first day of your period. So day one of the cycle is the first day of your true flow. Once your period is done, typically, you know, 3 to 5 days, it would be average. You have what in fertility awareness terms, we typically call dry days. So you have a couple dry days until you start to see your cervical fluid. So cervical fluid is produced by the cervix. The cervix is the base of the uterus, and it's produced in response to estrogen, because after you have your period, as you approach ovulation, what's happening is that your ovaries are maturing follicles, which is what holds the egg. And as these follicles develop, they make estrogen. And so estrogen is triggering this cervical fluid. So many women who at some point in their lives weren't on contraceptives may have noticed creamy, kind of lotiony, quote, discharge in their underwear, or clear kind of raw egg white consistency, or when they go to the washroom, they're wiping and it's super lubricative and slippery, like toilet paper hand hitting the back of the toilet when you're wiping yourself kind of thing. I know for myself, when I was a teenager, so looking back, there was a point where I remember saying to my mom, like, I feel really like wet, you know, what's going on? And she was like, oh, buy you panty liners. So she didn't really know what it was, but it's a normal cervical fluid that you produce as you approach ovulation. And many women have gone to the doctor for this discharge and wound up on antibiotics, because the doctor doesn't necessarily learn in medical school that it's a normal, healthy part of the menstrual cycle. They learn that vaginal discharge is associated with infection, kind of regardless. So back to the menstrual cycle. So we have your period, and then we have a couple dry days typically in a healthy cycle. Then we have cervical fluid anywhere from about 2 to 7 days as you approach ovulation. Again, I'm talking about a healthy, normal, typical cycle. And then you would ovulate once the estrogen reaches to a certain point. That's what triggers luteinizing hormone, if we want to get into the specifics. But essentially, you have estrogen that rises until it gets to the point like a thermostat in your house, and that's what triggers ovulation. So then once you ovulate, you start producing progesterone. Progesterone shuts down the mucus production, and you would get your period 12 to 14 days later. So what this means in terms of the fertility awareness method is that the cervical fluid is key to understanding your fertility. On those days you make cervical fluid, the sperm can actually survive in your body for up to 5 days. And there's a lot of reasons for that. There's an entire chapter on it in the book. Like, and it's, you know, kind of, so we could talk about that just the whole time. But the Cliff Notes version is that the cervical fluid is the perfect pH for sperm. It's like a home away from home. It's a similar pH to a man's seminal fluid. So literally a home away from home. Sperm can survive in there up to 5 days. The cervical fluid rapidly draws the sperm into the cervical crypts. It helps to filter out abnormal sperm, because even the healthiest man alive, the majority of his sperm are abnormal. And so we have this built-in mechanism. But all of that is to say that outside of that window, the cervix is closed, the vagina is acidic, and pregnancy can't happen. Mm-hmm. And so the whole, back to the study, so the Frank Herman study with this 99.4% efficacy, what they did is they taught the participants to chart their menstrual cycles in a specific symptothermal method. And the participants were taught by teachers. So they were taught to do it correctly. Mm-hmm. They were taught to do what we call the cross-check method in fertility awareness terms. The three main signs that you pay attention to are the cervical fluid, the basal body temperature, which is like the morning waking temperature, and cervical position. And so if you cross match when the cervical mucus dries up with the basal body temperature rise, there's a lot of research and scientific evidence to show that it confirms ovulation and you can't get pregnant after that. So they're combining all of these specific pieces of information. They have specific rules for managing the pre-ovulatory period as well in this study. And the participants had this incredibly high rate of success, which is on par with hormonal birth control, without being on hormonal birth control. So for anyone who's listening who thinks, ah, this is the rhythm method, is this some Catholic thing? Like, so this is actually a scientific thing. And yes, it's typically kind of like the history of it is a lot of it comes out of the Catholic Church, but it's a legitimate scientific, modern fertility awareness-based method that women can use if they want to avoid hormones.
Yeah, I love, there's the distinction of between the rhythm method in quotation marks and what this is. Cause I think did you read Taking Charge of Your Fertility as a part of your journey in this?
Oh yeah. That was the first book. I ran out and bought it as soon as I discovered that this was a thing. Mm-hmm. And I still, I think I have it like behind me. It's always because there.
I think it was that writer who talks about when they began their journey, they brought up the rhythm method and were like horribly shamed because it's so different. And we don't have to get into that, but I just in case anyone is wondering if those two things are related.
Well, real brief for anyone who doesn't know, the rhythm method is essentially a calendar calculation. So instead of observing, so fertility, that's what makes them different. Fertility awareness-based methods, you're actually observing your bodily signs. You're taking your temperature, you're checking your cervical position, or you're checking potentially cervical position is optional. I meant to say you're checking your cervical fluid. And so you're actually tracking. So every day of the cycle, I can say today I am fertile based on what I saw. Whereas with the rhythm method, it's literally like, okay, so I'm going to track a certain number of cycles. And then from there, I'm just going to know when I'm fertile based on a calculation of my average cycle length. And most women do experience cycle fluctuations. And so that's why the saying goes, you know, what do you call people who use the rhythm method? Parents. Bah!
Right.
Okay. I want to just for our listeners and for you tell you, you know, I think I'm on my fourth month of tracking right now. And this is what it looks like practically in my life. I keep a thermometer under my pillow and I put it in my mouth. The minute my eyes wake up in the morning, I try to hold it in there for a while before I turn it on. So it's sort of climatized to my body temperature. And then later in the day, I write that amount down in my little tracker. And I've noticed that it really only goes up and down about like 0.10 degrees. So it's always like 36.04 or like 36.47. So it's a very nuanced sort of like fluctuation in temperature. And the idea is that when after a certain amount of charting, I should be able to notice a correlation between my cervical mucus production days, the days where I have to wear underwear or can't wear my jeans twice. And then followed by maybe a day or two later, a slight rise in temperature that is sustained for a few days. That's my understanding of what I'm looking for, that the rise in the temperature is proof that ovulation has happened. Cause it has something to do, I think, with the shift in estrogen / progesterone.
So the cervical and this is I think you bring up a really good point as well, which is that the kind of sentiment around charting is, oh, it's too complicated, it's too much work. And I would say, like, did you brush your teeth this morning? You know, probably. Mm-hmm. Are you going to brush your teeth tonight? Probably. And so if you can handle that, you can handle charting. So there is certainly a learning curve. I like the analogy of comparing it to learning to drive a car. Like, even if you read a book, you can't just get in a car and drive, like you have to actually practice. And so there is this, you know, onboarding period. But what I find as well is that women who like to chart, they're interested in this stuff. And so it's not like this boring, oh, I got to chart my, it's kind of like, oh, I wonder if I have mucus today. So no one has ever forced someone to chart their cycles. Women self-select. So typically, you know, the women who are doing this, it's not this huge hassle on them. But back to your point. So the cervical fluid helps you to understand your fertile days. So, I mean, there's different ways to check. Taking Charge of Your Fertility talks about internal checking. And I teach my clients to check externally, wiping with toilet paper. But either way, you're checking every day to see if you have cervical fluid. And that allows you to identify the fertile window. Because after you've charted for a few cycles, you typically notice a pattern. You know, you have cervical fluid for several days and then it goes away. Mm-hmm. And this pattern keeps happening in a healthy, typical cycle. And so to your point, then when you see the cervical fluid, you know, these are the days of fertility. Cervical fluid means you could get pregnant. Cervical fluid means the cervix is open. I love analogies. So the cervix has been called nature's gate or a biological valve, because the mucus actually opens and closes it depending on whether or not you're in the fertile window. And, you know, I think of like a nightclub, it's either the bouncer's on duty or out to lunch. And so when you see fluid, cervical fluid, the bouncer's out to lunch, meaning the cervix is open. So this is the only period of time where if you have unprotected sex, the sperm actually can even be granted access.
All the riffraff can get into the club.
That's right.
Yeah.
And fortunately, the cervical fluid can, like, you know, sort that out, because it screens out the riffraff, so to mm-hmm. speak. Then once the progesterone rises, so after you ovulate, that's the only time in the cycle where you produce significant progesterone. And progesterone has a thermogenic effect on the body. So when I was first learning this, I mean, I'm pretty much like a science kind of geeky nerd person. And so this was really cool, because you can actually track it when you're charting your temperature. You can see it. And like 20 years in, the temperature still rises after ovulation. So it's this very interesting, it's sort of subtle, but it's still obvious when you're charting. You see this sustained shift in temperature, and you see it every cycle that ovulation takes place. So it's something that is biology. It's how our bodies are made. And so once you see that shift, you confirm it. And once you see that kind of correlate to the cervical fluid drying up, that is the post-ovulatory infertile phase. So for all the women who use this method for birth control, confirming ovulation is really great, because it means that that's the time in your cycle where you can literally, and I mean literally, have unprotected sex and the sperm just dies and you can't get pregnant. And this is like the secret that no one knew about.
So, okay. So we're talking about a method of birth control that has scientifically proven 99.4% efficacy. And yet it's not being taught an effective form of birth control. Is the reason for that just out of it's not convenient, you know, like, because it's a lot easier to just give someone a pill and say, take this, you know, every day for however much you take the pill. Like, is it a matter of convenience, or is it a matter of not trusting people to do the work to like habitualize this method? Like, why isn't it being offered as a viable method of birth control?
Well, I think that's the, like, what is it, $50 million question?
Right.
Ultimately, I mean, I can speculate as to some of the potential reasons why. I've obviously thought about this a lot, but I think the real reason is probably a lot deeper. But just from that kind of basic practical standpoint, so when I was researching for the fifth vital sign, you know, over 100 million women are on birth control. And for anyone who's listening, including myself, if you've ever taken birth control, it's not free. Mm-hmm. So someone gets paid every time we fill our pill packs. So we would be really kind of, you know, silly to pretend like a free method that's available to everybody that's just as effective doesn't put a potential, you know, issue into whoever's making money off of this. So to be frank, I think that at least part of the explanation is that it's not profitable. One of the, one of the kind of dirty little secrets of a lot of couples who for whatever reason aren't necessarily using hormonal contraceptives is withdrawal. So I know it's controversial to talk about withdrawal because we're taught that it's like a non-method, but apparently it's up to 96% effective when used correctly. Withdrawal.
Right.
We could talk about that. But so this is often just an example. Because I have to talk about the ways to manage the fertile window with my clients who are not on hormonal contraceptives. So I have to talk about condoms. I have to talk about withdrawal and diaphragms and cervical caps and alternative sex, meaning non-penis and vagina sexual activity. So I have to talk about all these things when I'm teaching my clients how to manage the fertile window, because when you're using fertility awareness, you've pulled the goalie, so to speak. So you are the method. And this is one of the reasons, like a valid reason, why a lot of physicians may be skeptical. If you insert an IUD into a woman, there's no reading that needs to take place. You insert the IUD and the effectiveness is completely based on the method. And the user just has to show up to the appointment.
Yeah.
With birth control, you have the method itself, but you still have a user component because you still have to remember to take it, right? Mm-hmm. With fertility awareness, it's entirely user dependent. So it leaves the physician or the healthcare provider with nothing, you know, to help you other than to, you know, ideally in my world, in my perfect world, they would refer women to teachers so that they could learn to use a specific method correctly. But ultimately, it's really up to the user. So that arguably is one of the arguments against it. Mm. But back to my withdrawal example. So if withdrawal is like potentially effective, right, like in the 90s percentile alongside hormonal contraceptives, you know, there's no one's making money off of that. No one makes money if men pull out. So one of the things I often say to my clients is like, well, there's such limited research on withdrawal in terms of its efficacy. I mean, there's a few studies that we can pull on, usually with a tiny participant size and all that kind of stuff. And I always say, who's funding the research? It's free and available to everybody. What is the benefit of these big drug companies pushing something that is literally free that you like could just do at home? So I don't really have an answer, but I think there's many. I think that's an aspect of it, the financial, the fact that it's completely user dependent. So, and I've interviewed a number of doctors who talked a little bit about their training and how they were trained around birth control. And how from that perspective, like, so this is secondhand from the doctors I've interviewed, but the perspective that they're taught essentially is that efficacy is the most important thing. So regardless, even, and to the point that we have research studies that look at, they'll study the women who complain about side effects to find out what their characteristics are, so that the doctors can be better prepared to deal with their objections. Mm. So we're literally there with efficacy is taught to be the most important thing, even over potentially the health impacts of the woman. So, you know, fertility awareness flies in the face of that system because it puts the complete onus on the user. And of course, we're, you know, it's like, oh, well, they're irresponsible, they're too stupid, it's too complicated. And so again, like what I always say to these concerns is that I think what's important is options. I can come across as really anti-pill because I talk about the side effects and I talk about an alternate option, but ultimately it's an option. And how could I be super anti-pill when I took the pill? So I think what's important is providing women with options because some women can't use hormonal contraceptives and they deserve to have an alternative method as well.
Right. Now, I know that, you know, we've been mentioning and mostly you've been mentioning, Lisa, and talking about like people who are people who have like healthy, normal might not be the right word, healthy working reproductive systems. Are there any folks who, for whatever health reasons, like the fertility awareness method might not be the right option for them? For whatever reason?
I think that's a really good question. From an absolute standpoint, I mean, no. I would say no. And the reason I would say that is one of the myths about fertility awareness is that you need to have this perfect 28-day, perfectly predictable menstrual cycle to use fertility awareness because it's based on the myth that fertility awareness is about predicting the cycle.
Right.
So the first kind of part of the answer would be no. So for example, if a woman had really long irregular cycles, she can still use fertility awareness. She can still identify which days are potentially fertile, which compared to which days are not. And she can still confirm ovulation with her temperature and cervical fluid changes. And so she can still use the method effectively. One of the challenges for women whose cycles are not healthy, however, is let's say, for example, you have a woman with PCOS, polycystic ovary syndrome, Now, the characteristics of PCOS from the menstrual cycle perspective are long irregular cycles and often multiple patches of cervical fluid or long patches of cervical fluid. So I just, you know, we just talked about how cervical fluid is how you identify your fertile days and the fertile window. So if you have a woman that has a 50-day cycle, that means she's ovulating likely on like day 38. Mm. And so between, you know, her period and day 38, she may have 20 days of cervical fluid. So it can be a challenge because she has all of these potential days of fertility and she's going to have to identify an alternative route. Now, that's just an example. But then on the flip side, if you're charting your cycle with fertility awareness and your cycle is 50 days, you know that that's not normal. So a normal cycle, it ranges anywhere from about 24 to 35 days. If you're put on the pill for something like that, then what happens is you get a bleed every 28 days. And again, because I love analogies, the analogy I have for this is that if you had a grease fire in your kitchen and the alarm is going off, you just pull out the batteries. Problem solved, right? So what happens to these women who have these cycle problems and when they're put on hormonal contraceptives is that the contraceptives hide the problem, they mask it. So this is why I refer to the menstrual cycle as a vital sign. You know, if someone has a fever, you don't just like, I don't know, put a blue shirt on them and let go, like, okay, problem solved.
Pour a bucket like, of water on them.
But even a bucket of water is like some kind of solution. But yes, that's a good analogy too. You need to figure out what the problem is. And so the challenge is that there's many women who kind of go through this cycle. They have this, you know, issue with their periods. They go to their doctor. The doctor puts them on the pill. The pill masks the problem and gives them a bleed every 28 days, which is not your period. So hormonal contraceptives primarily work by suppressing ovulation. So you don't have a cycle. The whole concept that they regulate your cycle or they trick your body into being pregnant is just not a thing. Those are lies, myths. Mm-hmm. So what happens is you mask it. And then let's say 5 years later, she wants to have a baby. So she comes off the pill, where's her period? The pill doesn't fix it. So whatever the problem was never got addressed. And so then she's offered drugs to make her ovulate and all that kind of stuff. And she kind of gets on that artificial reproductive train. So the, like, I know this is kind of like a long answer to your question, but even though it's not ideal to have obviously like a issue with your menstrual cycle, if you're using fertility awareness, just tracking the cycle can be the thing that notifies you that there's a problem and the thing that helps to motivate you to actually find a solution. Because in that case, PCOS, again, going to that example, is characterized by glucose intolerance, insulin resistance, hyperandrogenization, and also inflammation. And so there are ways to address that. PCOS is a metabolic condition. Women who have PCOS or those long irregular cycles are much more likely to develop type 2 diabetes. So this is like a health issue that we're just going to throw, like just going to mask it and just pretend like it doesn't exist and pretend like the cycle only matters when she wants to have kids, when literally it's actually telling us a deeper issue that could be happening with her health.
Yeah, that you've touched on so many great reasons why people might want to pick up this method and start trying it out. I would love to hear your thoughts from a really just like practical day-to-day living standpoint as a person with these fluctuating hormones, how tracking the cycle can help people with periods plan their lives better?
I mean, that's a really great question. I think that one thing that I find with, you know, because in my work, I'm always teaching women to chart, and a lot of women come into charting for very kind of practical reasons. It's like, I tried birth control, it didn't work for me. I need something else, so I need birth control. Or I'm trying to get pregnant. I need to figure this out. And then what happens as you chart is you realize how interconnected the cycle is to your health. So charting can help you really understand what works for you as an individual in a number of different ways. So just from the basic sense of recognizing that, you know, in the first half of the cycle, you're predominantly producing estrogen. The second half of the cycle, you're producing significant progesterone. And how that can affect your moods, your energy, your appetite, all of those different things. It doesn't mean that it turns you into a different person, but certainly as you approach, you know, every woman's experience isn't the same, but as you approach ovulation, you may find that you do have more energy, you might feel more outgoing. If you have a histamine issue, you might find that those act up at that time. So it's not always birds singing and all of that. But ultimately, you kind of figure that stuff out. And then as your period approaches, when the progesterone is rising and falling, you know, as you approach your period, you might find that you feel a little less outgoing, a little less energetic. And so what happens is that you kind of learn that you have limits. And you kind of learn some of those bio-individuality aspects of yourself. Mm. So for example, for someone who's charting their cycles, let's say you start a new diet and then you add exercise to the mix or whatever, and you start to notice that the luteal phase shortens or you start to notice some spotting. Well, that actually tells you that you've reached your limit and can prompt you to change some of those behaviors to make sure that you're getting enough to eat, to making sure that you're not overdoing it. And so it's this literal real-time vital sign, if you learn and understand it, that can help you to just manage your life better. And so as I, now I'm 38, and so as I've kind of been in this work for a while, one of the trends that I've started noticing is, you know, women in their 40s are busy. Like, I don't know any woman in her 40s who's not busy. And what I mean by that is the 40s are very interesting. It's a very interesting age. You often have all of these responsibilities. Work responsibilities are kind of at their peak. Family responsibilities are kind of at their peak. A lot of women at that age range have kids and parents that are aging, as well as a thriving career and friends. And it's just a very busy time. And so if you haven't had that opportunity to learn that your body has limits and you're still at 40 trying to live like you were 20, drinking coffee as breakfast and not eating and working out all the time, because when you hit 40, it sometimes can be a little harder to keep that weight off. Mm. And so you're doing all these things. And if you're not paying attention to the cycle, you can really kind of throw yourself into a big problem. So this is just my way of saying that when you track your cycles, it's actually this built-in mechanism that is responding to your body. And it can, if you pay attention, when your cycles are out of whack, it means typically that there's something else that's out of whack that you might want to kind of rein in a little bit.
Mm-hmm. I too have also felt that my period has taught me a little bit about when I might be not handling stress as well as I thought I was. I had an event in January that was really stressful and my period just didn't come for 2 weeks. And I had just started tracking. So I was like, this is indicative of something. And it was just like, it was the most alarming of all of the symptoms that I had, where I was like, okay, I'm pretty sure that this is a stress symptom, if not just my body's under a lot of stress, but perhaps my mind too.
Well, and can I just touch on that for half a second? This is one of the areas that I find really impactful for women who start charting, because sometimes we're so used to living in chaos, for lack of a better word, just with the normal stressors of life, whether it's your 2-hour commute somewhere. I mean, maybe there's less of that right now, or whether it's like that crazy boss or this crazy situation or whatever. And you kind of, what I find is, you know, cause I'm, you know, I'm just there. I have my appointments with clients. We look at the charts, and I had a conversation just like this with a client yesterday. Bridie, just like exactly like her, she's kind of like, I was taking all these pregnancy tests, where's my period? And it's kind of like, what was going on that month? And there was like a slew of like crazy things, right? That happened, like issues with things, pipes bursting and houses and work stressors and all of these things. And she's kind of like, yeah, I guess so. So sometimes it's the charting and paying attention that actually validates. Because as women too, I think we have a tendency to really downplay all this stuff. Like, oh, you know, it's fine. My electricity always goes out. Like, you know, like it's totally fine. Like I just did a little meditation. Like it's all good. I'm like, you know, no, it's not all good. And so sometimes it's a good reminder for us. It's even a way to ground us in like, no. This was a stressful month for you. Have you taken time to take care of yourself? And the fact that your period is 2 weeks late, it's not this huge deal, but it just means that literally, like, it was real. That stress really affected you, and you should know that.
I don't know why I feel this way, I do know why I feel this way, but I when I read this and it was like, okay, this is so applicable and feels so natural and sort of intuitive now that I'm getting the swing of it. Did we have this knowledge years and years and years ago and then it was taken from us for some reason? I know why I'm feeling that way. But how old is this method, like in this form? Because like taking your temperature wasn't really accessible to people, like your own temperature wasn't accessible to people like 100 years ago, let's say.
Yeah, I mean, I don't, in terms of like recent history, you know, the quote rhythm method has been around for over 100 years, and the studies and research around fertility awareness-based methods definitely go back to like the 60s and even earlier than that. And so modern fertility awareness-based methods, as far as I know, we do have a recent history that dates back, you know, within the last century. So it's not like it's becoming more mainstream now, but it's not like I learned the Just East method through Just East College. And I'm pretty sure the founder started the Just East like 40 years ago or something. So it's not like it's just like this new thing that happened. But in terms of your question and kind of like the broader question of did people have this knowledge, I don't know the answer. But the first hormonal contraceptive pill was put on the market in 1960. And so before that, no one had the option of not having a cycle unless they were pregnant, breastfeeding, or ill. So arguably, if you have all these women who are menstruating, obviously they may not have known the depths of it, but women would know that just the cyclical kind of changes in their cycle. And so I'm sure there was some knowledge, but you know, I would love to get my hands on some of the kind of ancient knowledge there, but I'm not really privy to that.
Mm-hmm. Well, Lisa, I got to say, this has been, it's been such a lovely time to sit with you and to get, you know, just a glimpse into some of the work that you've done with the Fifth Vital Sign. Let our listeners know how they can follow you, see everything that you're up to, and where they can get their hands on this book.
Well, thank you so much for that. If this conversation interests you, I have a podcast, the Fertility Friday podcast. I think it's in year 7 now. So I've been going on about this stuff for a while. So you can just type Fertility Friday in your favorite podcast player. I'm also at Fertility Friday on Instagram. So that's fun, where I kind of post some inflammatory stuff over there. And the Fifth Vital Sign is available on Amazon. It's in paperback, ebook, and audiobook formats. And everything we talked about today and a lot more is in that book. Because I'm not a doctor, I felt the need to kind of not only justify what I'm saying, but really provide the framework of like, don't just listen to me. If you want the data, it's there. So there's 40 pages of citations. There's over 1,000. It's a well-researched book. And so for the concepts, if there's anything that, you know, you're reading in there and you're kind of like, really? I didn't know about that. If you're a research head like me, you have then the roadmap to be able to go find that original research yourself. So just to kind of put it out there, because for women who want to approach their fertility in this natural way, we're often met with a lot of opposition. So I did a poll on my Instagram where it's kind of like, have you ever talked to your doctor about fertility awareness? What was the most common response? And it was like laughed at, eye roll. They told me, you know, well, we'll see you in a couple months when you're pregnant. You better start taking a prenatal now. And so women who discover this knowledge often are very excited about it, but we're met with a lot of just negative kind of like discouragement. And so that's why kind of in this field, you kind of have to justify it with the research. Like, no, it's science. Read it.
Yeah, totally. And that was one of the things that I was kind of curious to know, is what was the pushback that you've heard from in the realm of medical science and the healthcare world. But it doesn't surprise me. It doesn't surprise me that people hear that, because, you know, like you said yourself, like this isn't being taught in med school. You know, this isn't a form of birth control that's being taught. So kudos to you for putting in the work and for creating such a valuable resource. I mean, I'm just
and fun. Again, I love this workbook.
Yeah.
There's so many like fun ways to there. I track like I started tracking night sweats because I noticed this is a recurring theme in my life. Some people don't know that about me. Sometimes I wake up soaking wet, like straight through the sheets, and I have to sleep on a towel. So I started tracking that. I'm sure it has something to do with my cycle in some way. And if anybody out there is just an organizationophile like I am, you're going to just geek out so hard on this. And this is not a sponsored episode.
Well, Lisa, thank you again for taking time out of your busy schedule to sit down and chat with us. This really, really was awesome.
Thank you so much for having me.
There you have it, folks. That was it. That was the last conversation for season two. We are going into season three as of the first Wednesday of September. And we are so happy that you have joined us this far on this fun little journey that we've been on. We're so happy that you're part of our little weird family. And I hope you have a fucking fantastic August.
Stay tuned, patrons, for your personal episode.
And again, if you're a patron and you want to follow along with what's going on in Bridie and I's lives, just hit us up on Patreon with your Instagram handle. We'll add you to our close friends list, and you can catch all the behind the scenes of our life. And also turn me on to Instagram as well. So have a good summer, everyone. Love you all.
We're going to miss you.
Friday, I love you.
I love you too, baby.
And that is it for this season.
Until next season, go touch yourself a whole bunch.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.